Cordia.
Thank you. May it please the court, counsel. This appeal is about the guidelines application. There are two ways of reading Booker. There is the minority approach, as I'm sure the court is well aware, where the guidelines are used consultively. That is, they are used in conjunction with 18 U.S.C. 3553A. And then there's the majority of the circuits in this country that give the guidelines substantial weight. That is, they look at the guidelines. If they're calculated correctly, they're reasonable, and there's no need to worry about 3553A. Unfortunately, what this means in practice is that the district courts in these majority circuits, including the Seventh Circuit, are treating the guidelines as presumptive and therefore mandatory and in violation of a defendant's Sixth Amendment rights and in violation of statutory law as well. It starts from the beginning. In drafting a PSR, pre-sentence investigation report, probation and parole focuses primarily on the guidelines. They do a calculation of the criminal history points, a calculation of the base offense level, and provide a sentence in regards to that.
Okay, let's fast forward to Judge Crabb's remarks, because at page 14 and 15 of the transcript, she considered the 3553A factors. She talks about his criminal history, his upbringing, the seriousness of the offense. I want to know why that isn't enough for us to determine it's reasonable. And why isn't that enough of a discussion of 3553A? It's not like she ignored the factors.
She addressed those because we addressed those. And she was doing what she was told by the circuit. But I have concerns with that. And I think because of the process that's in place as it begins, beginning with the PSR, I mean, from the beginning, they're inundated, the district courts, with the notion that they're going to apply the guidelines. What's happening in the district courts is you're seeing, we can bring up the 3553A factors, but a duck is a duck is a duck. We know what's going to happen. And that's what's happening. So certainly she spent a paragraph roughly addressing the filings and arguments made by myself in regards to the sentencing. And frankly, I think the guidelines in this case based 272 months is unreasonable for a nonviolent drug offense. The 3553A factors that were raised. And here's a guy who, at age 9, his mother dies because of domestic abuse, living in poverty, living not too far from here, in a community that's rife with drugs and violence, struggles as an orphan child, essentially, sits shipped down to Mississippi to live with another family. Same situation. I mean, yes, he has a horrific criminal history in a sense, but at the same time, understanding where that came from and understanding what he's done since then, I mean, this was a non-violent offense.
So when the court talks about taking into all these factors into account, the mistreatment, you know, his gang membership, all of these things, how he grew up, the court determines the sentence at the low end of the range would be appropriate. I mean, the court is taking, I mean, you're just saying the court should just go under.
Yeah, it
should go under the guideline range.
Based on the 272-month sentence.
And the court certainly has the authority to do that.
Yes. And we're saying that the application of the guidelines in this case were unreasonable for 272 months. They should have departed, at the very least departed downward. And that brings up the 5K1 issue. Again, the government moved for a 5K1 motion. That was a motion that the government doesn't take lightly. It's a motion that is approved by supervisors at the Attorney General's office. And the government's in the best position, and the defendant's in the best position to know what's been proffered. In this case, it was denied based on the fact that the judge didn't feel that Mr. Cravette was as forthcoming in his proffer as he should have been, and that his role in helping another one of his co-defendants turn himself in was not sufficient to warrant a downward departure. But one of the other reasons that wasn't addressed was the fact that it was brought because his plea, which was a discussion that began from the very beginning with the U.S., with the government, essentially led the other two co-defendants to enter a plea and made a lot of hard work for the government a lot easier. And so that was denied. But I think what we're seeing happening here in the district courts is that while, you know, if defense counsel brings up 3553A factors, particularly in the Western District, it's a song and dance, to be frank. We know what's going to happen. Based on the decisions of this court, Dean, and I'm going to butcher this name even though I've seen it 100 times, my key to it, I hope I said that right, close enough, the presumption of reasonableness is so strong that any 3553A factor is ultimately meaningless. And that is the problem, because we have a sentencing mandate under 3553 for a sentence that is sufficient but not more than necessary. And it's Mr. Cavett's feelings in this case that his sentence was not sufficient, or strike that, his sentence was more than necessary to meet his needs.
I don't understand this whole line of argument. Booker increased the discretion of district judges, didn't reduce it. One thing district judges can do with their discretion is follow the guidelines. The national dispersion has gone up. Some judges are disposed to depart from the guidelines, so the number of departures has gone up. Other judges are not so disposed, but I certainly don't see in Booker any command to depart from the guidelines. It just tells judges they can do it if they want, and we know that the judge here didn't want. And where's the command in Booker to reduce sentences?
There is no command to reduce sentences, but there's a command to look at 3553A realistic, to actually look at it and spend time discussing this. It's not happening. PSRs, there is no recommendation.
Command in Booker to write long opinions.
We're not asking for
nothing to do with how judges explain themselves.
I think based on Dean and the other cases that have come out, Dean and his progeny, district courts have no choice but to apply the guidelines. And I don't have the stats.
I don't comprehend it. It's perfectly clear under Booker that Judge Crabb could, if she wanted, have given a sentence of less than 272 months imprisonment. She knew that. We know that. And had she decided to give a sentence of 200 months imprisonment, that sentence would be invulnerable to an appeal by the government. So how is it that anyone is being commanded to follow the guidelines? I just don't understand the argument.
I see that I'm in my rebuttal time. I'll answer that question. There's data out there I didn't have at the time when I filed this, but it is clear the data shows that the courts that are using the substantial weight approach are following the guidelines, and that the courts that aren't, there's just a really immense difference in the sentences.
As I say, what in Booker says the court shouldn't follow the guidelines? Judge Crabb could issue an opinion tomorrow morning saying, I think the guidelines are the greatest invention since sliced bread, or this being Wisconsin. I think they're the greatest invention since cheese. My plan is, I think they're incredibly well-reasoned, my plan is to follow them. That's how I'm exercising my discretion. Would that be reversible error under Booker? I don't see how it would be.
It's getting, you're putting forward a tougher situation. I mean, defendants are faced with a situation where they're getting long sentences under guidelines. They know that 3553 is out there.
The guidelines is different from being locked into the guidelines. Judge Crabb said the former. That is, she thought the guideline sentence was a sensible thing to do rather than the latter. They're quite distinct in principle.
Thank you. Is there any other questions?
Thank you, counsel. Mr. Shaman.
Good morning. May it please the Court. Meredith Dushman on behalf of the United States. I want to clarify something right away in case I don't get to it, and I don't want you to be misled, and I don't think Mr. Cornea meant to mislead you. I think he just misspoke, but I think it's important to clarify. Our office's 5K1 motions are not reviewed by the Attorney General's office. They are reviewed by folks in our office, but they're not actually reviewed by the Attorney General's office in Washington. I didn't want to leave you with that impression. Going all the way back to the beginning here, obviously the issue here is reasonableness. The defendant contends his sentence was unreasonable for three reasons. First, he has this notion that the use of a pre-sentence report makes the guidelines mandatory. He argues that because the pre-sentence report doesn't have a separate section in it that says analysis of 3553A factors, that it creates a mandatory guideline range. But the argument ignores the purposes of the PSRs and the practical realities of how judges use them. These PSRs are just tools used to assist courts in gathering facts necessary to make sentencing decisions. Pursuant to Federal Rule of Criminal Procedure 32, the PSR has to contain all sorts of things, most of which overlap with a lot of the things that the judges need to consider under 3553A. But if a defendant thinks that something is being left out, there's ample opportunity by way of objection to the pre-sentence report, by way of a sentencing memorandum, by way of argument during sentencing, by way of the defendant's own statements at sentencing, to present all those to the court. But then it's up to the court, just like it always has been, to use those facts from the pre-sentence report and the arguments made by the parties to fashion of a reasonable sentence. Frankly, the pre-sentence writer, I don't think, has the duty or authority to make ultimate decisions or on proper advisory guideline ranges or the weight to be given to a particular 3553A factor. The discretion always lies with the judge, and that's just as it should be. The fact that there's no separate analysis of the 3553A factors in the pre-sentence report doesn't undermine the court's sentencing discretion. It certainly doesn't foreclose the defendant's ability to present mitigating factors, and it doesn't render the guidelines mandatory. He also argues, as I think some other defendants in this court have argued recently, that the parsimony provision of 3553A requires the court to give the lowest possible sentence. Essentially, he contends that if he can come up here and name an alternative sentence which might be lower, the court should be required to order the district court to then give it. But I think, first of all, this assumes de novo review of the sentence, and it flip-flops the role of appellate courts and sentencing judges, inappropriately so. Further, the argument is contrary to the warnings that this court has given not to confuse a debatable sentence with an unreasonable one. The only issue is whether the sentence imposed was reasonable, and it was. I don't want to belabor Mr. Cavett's criminal history, but Mr. Cornea did say low-level, I think, offender or something like that. And I just don't want to leave that out there. He's a large-scale drug dealer responsible for between 500 and 1.5 kilos of crack cocaine. In a search warrant executed on May 11, 2006, there were $61,000 in drug proceeds in the house. He's a high-level gang member. He's been a member of the Gangster Disciples for more than 20 years, including, by his own admission, serving as a national recruiter for the gang. He's got a long, violent criminal history. He spent time in prison in three different states.
Was the criminal history the main driver of the guidelines range here?
Well, sort of, yes, because he was a career offender, and he did plead to the 50 or more grams, so it was the 10 to life offense. So his base offense level is 37 because he was a career offender, and then also the criminal history category 6, which goes with that. But he didn't only get a criminal history category 6 because of that. He would have been a criminal history category 6 anyway because of all of the points. But in this case, too, the quantity was high enough. I think the quantity we finally settled on, initially the pre-sentence writer determined it at 38. We eventually settled on 36. So it was right around the same, the quantity and the base offense level based on the career offender. So it was kind of both.
Does the government ever argue for a non-guideline sentence in any situation other than a substantial assistance 5K1?
I can't speak for everybody, but I know I've never asked for one.
Is there a policy
on asking for a below-the-guideline range sentence?
Well, agreeing with the defense to argue for a non-guideline sentence.
I don't think our office has a formal policy. I think that would be something that would always be run through, you know, the criminal chief and probably the first assistant. But I know, all I can say is I know I've never asked for one. There certainly may be other cases where we have, but I don't know of any. I'm sorry. So going back briefly to Mr. Cavett, it is certainly true he grew up in a bad neighborhood and he had a terribly violent household, and I don't mean to give short shrift to that. But Your Honor already commented, the judge didn't give short shrift to it. She talked extensively about it. She talked about how horrible it was that he lost his mother to domestic violence, talked about difficulties of living in bad neighborhoods, and the fact that he had difficulty getting jobs. I don't think that she just gave short shrift to it and just ignored it and just went ahead and gave a guideline sentence. She did listen to him. She did consider his arguments. Ultimately, however, she gave him a sentence at the low end of the range, and I believe that was reasonable, and I'd ask the court to affirm the sentence. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Anything further, Mr. Cornea?
Just briefly, Your Honors. It's Mr. Cavett's position that you cannot have a reasonable sentence or determine whether a sentence is reasonable under the guidelines, and in comparing that to a 3553A sentence, if you do not have something to compare that with. There is not, in these situations, the judges are not saying, if I'm not using the guidelines, I'll be sentencing you to 280 months or 250 months. And in not knowing that there is what sentences exist out there, I think it's impossible to determine whether or not a sentence is actually reasonable and in compliance with 3553A. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Mr. Cavett, we appreciate your willingness to accept the appointment in this case and the assistance you've been both to your client and the court. The case is taken under advisement, and the court will be in recess until 2 o'clock this afternoon.